translation. Okay, in the fifth chapter. Okay. So it says, so he says that a person who, very few people reach this level, and he says that a person who is on that level, I would not consider him, what is it, wouldn't consider him lower than the prophets. I would not say that he is inferior to the prophets. Amazing. He says, I refer to a man who directs all the powers of his soul solely towards God, may be exalted, who does not perform an important or trivial action nor utter a word unless that action or that word leads to virtue or to something leading to virtue, or and who reflects and deliberates upon every action and motion, sees whether it leads to that goal or not, and then does it, period. This is what the exalted requires that we make as our purpose when he says, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul. He means, set the same goal for all the parts of your soul, namely to love the Lord your God. The prophets, peace upon them, have also urged this purpose. He, Solomon, said, in all your ways know him. B'chol derechecha da'ayu. The sage explained this and said, even with a transgression, afilu b'dvar avera, that is, you should make your goal the truth when doing such a thing, even if from a certain point of view you commit a transgression. That's not exactly the way he says. He says, klama shetasim lo'osa pula tachlis klapei anas. Okay, it means even though there's not vera involved, but you still should utilize that klape anus. Okay, that it should be for the purpose of truth. Then he says, the sages, peace be upon them, summarize this whole notion in the briefest possible words and encompass the meaning with utmost perfection. So that if you were to consider the brevity of those words, how they express the greatness and magnificence of this notion in its entirety, about which so many works have been composed without being able to grasp it, then you would know it was undoubtedly spoken by divine power. This is what they say in one of their commands in this tractate. Let all your deeds be for the sake of heaven. This is the notion we have explained in this chapter, and is, I mean, at least is as much as we think needs to be mentioned here in accordance with these introductory remarks. Does anybody grasp what he's saying? I mean, he's saying that this idea, by the way, I mean, that concept is definitely, in my opinion, is 100% true. And namely, the concept is that if a person has an understanding of Yahadis, like the Rambam says, I think I mentioned that in my in my paper on the Torah Sinai. Okay, I didn't remember the Rambam, but that's exactly what the Rambam says. Basically, what the Rambam is saying is that if a person understood Torah Shebaal Peh, he would see from that itself that there is no other possibility than that it was given in Minas Shamayim. That's what he says. It's interesting. Now, as a person, and that's something, if I would have known at the time, I would have referenced the Rama. That I said the proof of Torah Sinai, excuse me? Yeah, but it's good. But the proof of Torah Sinai is definitely a logical proof, and anybody that's logical will definitely follow it. But it's still an external proof, okay? That's what I showed in the paper, that everything we do is based upon external proofs. But I did say that there is, that external proof leads to an internal proof. That where the person really sees the Chochmah Satara is just like a physicist sees the Chochmah of physics. He doesn't have to believe in it. I mean, he's convinced based upon his knowledge. And the same thing is true with Torah. That a person that sees the Chochmah of Torah really, and really is on a level, it has to be on a certain level, though. The person is not, a person that doesn't, you cannot use that proof to an outsider. There's no way. Because he doesn't know it. I mean, if he doesn't, you're going to tell him that, that this is so, he's not going to believe you. Okay, a physicist will believe, because there are a lot of physicists. I mean, a physicist is unbelievable. Weinberg can write about physics, the beauty of ideas, and even though people are on the outside, they'll believe him because they'll say he's a physicist and they accept physics. It's a neutral thing. There's no reason why they shouldn't. But no one's going to believe you. They're going to say you're prejudiced. You have an ulterior motive to tell them that Yahadis is true. But the fact is, I mean, it's an unfortunate situation, but the fact is, what the Rambam, that's what the Rambam is saying over here, basically, Namely, that a person who really reaches a certain level of depth in Yahadus sees that these ideas could not be anywhere than from God. I mean, it's just virtually impossible. I think I was discussing that with you in my house earlier. Yeah, because, but you have to have knowledge, you have to have knowledge in general in order to be able to see it. You have to have knowledge in general. And it's like the, what does the Ibn Ezra say? You have the Ibn Ezra where he says that a person cannot reach, give me a treyasa. The Ibn Ezra says, it's an Oshea Vav, where he says, the Neid'a, near the Foladas Esar Hashem. So the evidence, what is it? It sounds funny. The Neda, how do the words go? The Neda, and then it says, near the Foladas of Hashem. So he says, She near the Foladas of Hashem, Ki ze sod kolachachmos. Ubavur ze levado nivra ha'adam. That's all the chachmos ultimately is knowledge of God. It's interesting, it was a physicist. His name was. So Rabbi used to say when he was in Columbia University, so when a student would come with a project, he would say to him, is this going to get you closer to God? That's what I said. That's an amazing thing. Yeah. Is that why you chose this project? Yeah. It's an amazing thing. Yeah. So he says that's kolachachmos. Kolachachmos. Ubavur ze levado nivra adam. And that's the sole purpose of man. Rocky says, Lo yucha ladas es Hashem ad sheyilmad chochmos harbe. He says, you can't know God unless he learns a lot of chochmos. Okay, shehen kmo sulam lalos el zos hamaylo al yona. It's like a ladder going up to that level. The Radak, by the way, quotes him as well. So this is the Ibn Ezra, not from the Marne Vohan. But anyways, So apparently that's where Ibn Ezra learns the pasuk. The Nedar near the full Adas is Hashem. So it's a fun way. It doesn't work. I mean, what is it? The Nedar we should know, and near the full Adas should just say the near the full Adas is Hashem. So apparently what he means is the Nedar we should know that the Tachlis Adam is near the full Adas is Hashem. That's the Nedar we should know. That near the Foladas Hashem, that this is because those sowed kolachachmos, and that's the tachlis kolodam. Okay? That's what it means. Nedar, we should know. What should we know? We should know near the Foladas Hashem, that's the tachlis kolodam. Near the Foladas Hashem is the whole philosophy. That's what we should know. Okay. So, that's the Ibn Ezra. But the point is, I'm mentioning the same thing over here. That a person has to have like the Ibn Ezra says, on the ultimate level, a person has to have Shor Chochmais. But if a person has the Shor Chochmais, and he sees the Chochma from the Torah itself, he concludes, just like the Ram says, that it must, there's no doubt that this had to be through Nevuah. What is it, what the Ram calls, what he calls over here, that undoubtedly spoken by divine power. Had to be through the book, because there's no other way that such a thing is possible. Okay. So, but that requires a certain level in Chochmas HaTorah, and also a certain level in Shor Chochmas, like the Ibn Ezra says. Without that combination, you really can't have that experience. That experience is simply impossible for an ordinary person. Okay. Now, that's why the Rambam, you see, that's why the Rambam. That's what the Rambam over here sounds very difficult, because what is the Rambam saying? He's saying that this, he's going to show you something that when you see this, you're going to say right away, must be Nevuah. There's no other possibility. Okay, but as they're in the Rambam's usual method, he talks a lot about it, but he doesn't really tell you what it is. Okay? He says, starts from over here. The sage, he's only needs the last part. The sage explained this and said, a little before, the prophets, peace be upon them, have also urged this purpose. He, Solomon, said, in all your ways know him. This is B'chol D'Rechecha Da'eil. And he says, the sages explained this and said, even with a transgression, I feel with Vavera. Okay, that's the key. He says, the sages, I'm skipping because I'm trying to just get to the essence. The sages, peace be upon them, summarize this whole notion in the briefest possible words and encompass the meaning with the utmost perfection, so that if you were to consider the brevity of those words, how they express the greatness and magnificence of this notion in its entirety, about which so many works have been composed without being able to grasp it, then you would know it was undoubtedly spoken by divine power. This is what they say in one of their commands in this tractate. Let all your deeds come as a chiyuv Hashem Shemayim. Be for the sake of heaven. This is the notion we have explained in this chapter, and is as much as we think needs to be mentioned here in accordance with these introductory remarks. That's it. Okay. Basically, Ram says goodbye. Okay? So what is the Rambam saying? I mean, he says that this idea is so unbelievable, so unfathomable, that people have written works on this and they still haven't grasped it, and Chazal, in two words, expressed it. What did they say? They said, afilu b'dvarvera. All right. What are they saying? Man just gropes along with his inferior mechanisms trying to perceive this ultra fine reality that God created. Okay? Why is that? Oh. What?
Because physics, you can verify, you know it's true because we see it. Physics is verifiable.
What I'm saying is that your premise is not true. Shmuley's saying that if you could perceive it, you could have made it up. I said that premise is not true. But you see from physics that that's not true. You see from physics, you understand all the chachma physics that we know, and you can see that this stems from a source that is far beyond man and makes man look like his brain is like a clumsy kind of a tool, grappling with, like you're trying to do something which requires a fine instrument, and you have a clumsy plier. I mean, you're trying to do a surgery on the most sensitive part of the human body, a nerve. Okay, that's what it is. So you see that the human mind can perceive that something is beyond. So what I'm saying is that just because an idea, you could perceive the idea, does not mean, you know, you could sense that this requires a greater force. So therefore, you could see an idea which you could see that idea could not have come from a human source. It's beyond the human source. I just want to say one thing. Because that's something which I think should be clarified. That the truth of the matter is there's no real difference between philosophy and between physics. And people to say that one is empirically verifiable and the other one is not is a mistake. Because philosophy is about reality just like physics is about reality. The only thing is what your criteria for accepting reality is different. That's the only difference. But to the philosopher who accepts certain things, the psychologist, he accepts certain trends, the only thing is, what are the criteria? There are different criteria. To say I accept this table, I use my sense perception, okay? But to say I accept paranoia, it's more than just sense perception. But there's no difference really between psychology, physics, philosophy, or any subject, because every subject has to be about something. The question is when you recognize the something and what means you use to recognize the something, okay? But everything you use is always going to be a study based upon phenomena. The only question is what the criteria for your phenomena are. Okay? So if you are a person that is like most people are, most people are not very intelligent and don't use their minds, so therefore to them what is more real is the senses. Okay? But the more a person gets involved in physics, the more he sees the senses really are nothing in terms of conveying truth, just a shell, a surface kind of phenomena. And to understand, I mean, that's what Einstein said, that all the physicists till him made a mistake in assuming that it was everything was very close to the senses. But he says, now you see, in order to understand this, you must go really far, far away into an abstract world of mind, and then you can come back and you'll start understanding what's going on. So basically, ultimately, even physics today becomes something which, if you just limit yourself to the old criteria of what you're accepting as reality, you're going to be gone. You don't. Okay? That's basically Russell coined the phrase naive realism. That's been disproven with modern physics. No, you can't have naive realism anymore. Okay? But anyways, so now philosophy and physics and everything, they're all the same. There's no difference. Okay. Say something, which I'm not going to say that this is what the Rambam means, because I can't guarantee I'm Yerid Lasof Daito, but I'll just tell you an idea that is interesting. You mentioned Rambam, because an idea occurred to me on the same Chazal, on the same Pasuk, B'chol Derechecha Da'ehu, that I felt also was quite remarkable. And that is as follows, that you see, when it says B'chol Derechecha Da'ehu, interesting thing. What it means is the following. What it means is that a person who is a true chacham lives differently than a person who is simply a person of a member of the Hamon Am. Okay, I mean that's a distinction of Chazal, as much as people don't like to hear it. But the fact is that distinction is a basis of a Yisod Yadus, I think the Rambam says somewhere. So if a person doesn't have that Yisod, the difference between Amaris and Talmud Chacham, then he's missing the whole Das. Okay. It's intrinsic in the nature of our system, of Yahadus, which gives it its one of its primary marks of distinction. Okay? And it's based upon the whole understanding of the whole system. But what it means is like this. You see, a religious person, I didn't think into it, a religious person lives a dichotomized existence. Okay, split in two. Right? He is at one time, he is a good person. Other times, he's a bad person. Okay? Now, when he's a good person, he feels that he's with God. He's good now. He's davening. He's doing mitzvahs. But then there's another side of his life where he's doing things that he's unhappy with in terms of his sense of self-religiosity. Okay. Those areas of his mind he has to deal with in a certain way. How does the person deal with that? Simple mechanism. He blocks it. He creates a division in his mind. There are two selves. There's a self which is the good religious self, and then there's another self where he takes a break. In other words, now there's recess. You know what I mean? Now is recess time, and he can do whatever he wants. And then he comes back to the other self. If he is a truly religious person, by true I mean he's not simply a phony, but he has a certain amount of honesty with himself, so he considers the real self to be the religious self. And the other one is kind of, he needs a break. I mean, he gives himself some kind of a way out. I mean, he can't always be religious. So, okay, so God has to understand, you know, he has to take a break here and there and satisfy his instinctual nature, his instinctual urges, okay? Whatever frame of reference it is. But that's the way he exists. And that's the way he survives. Because he can't survive any other way. All right? What does Gemara say? Gemara says, Oili mi yitzri and oili mi yotzri. That's what Chazal says, right? This person's caught. Not that a person doesn't want to be religious. I think that's probably the most powerful force in man. Certainly one of the most powerful, not the most powerful. I really think that most people really would like to be religious. Why not? It's a wonderful feeling. It's a tremendous feeling. The problem is only me yitzri. The problem is that he has a problem because he just can't survive that way because the yitzer starts making demands and he has to satisfy the yitzer because if it keeps going it becomes so impossible that he can't function anymore. So he's got to take a break and satisfy the Yetzer. Okay? That's Oli Miyitzri, Oli Miyotzri. Chazal. Another Chazal where I'd say shows a prophetic understanding. But But that's, so therefore, if you understand this, you'll understand the way a religious person survives, okay? And that's the way it is throughout the world. I don't care which religion you take, it's going to be that way. All right? Because it's the same kind of a thing, all right? Whatever religion is always going to make a demand against the instincts. Always going to, otherwise it's not a religion. So that's, by the way, when they have when people have this devil worship, you see, that's an attempt to make a religion to solve that dilemma of Oli Miyitzri, Oli Miyotzri. That's what they try to do. They try to take the evil and make that into the religion. So therefore, he solved the problem. You see? And that's what it is, basically. That's what it is. You have to understand these things. These are, you know what I mean? Every craziness that man indulges in, it may be crazy, but you have to, there's a logic behind it, because it's all phenomena of Adam, which is ultimately stems from Chochmas Elohim. So that's the way it works. That's how it works. What? Okay. That's how it works. So it goes, that's the dilemma. That's the dilemma that everybody faces. Oli Miyitzri, Oli Miyotzri. It's not that people don't want to be. I guarantee you, in my opinion, if people had the choice, they would all choose to be, to be religious, if they could. Because the rewards are very, very great. Person, there's nothing greater than feeling great about yourself, feeling terrific about yourself. That's the best feeling. Everybody tries to get that feeling. That's what everybody's trying for. Okay? So if a person could do it, he'd do it. The problem is, everybody tries to do it, but then they see it's not working. Okay? So, and that's really what happens if a person really persists and doesn't recognize the demands of the Yetzer, they could, God forbid, fall into mental illness. Okay, holy, a person could, and that happens sometimes, unfortunately. So the person that makes it is the person that, has these areas of, exemption in terms of their religious strivings, all right? And that's the way it is. Like I said, that's universal. That's the way it is everywhere. But there's one religion and a different idea, and that's Yahadis. Yahadis said, "Bechol derochecha da'ehu." What was Shlomo HaMelech saying? What was the Navi saying over there? Even bechol derochecha da'ehu. As a new idea, and Chazal pointed it out in two words. They said, "Afilu b'dvar avera." That's enough to signal you. Think about that. What does it mean? It means like this. It means that the true person that worships God according to Torah in the proper way, you see, is really subservient to emes, to truth. To truth. Truth in every area. Even truth about the self. Okay? And even about the self when the self is involved in avera. Okay? It means that the desire for MS breaks all barriers. There are no hidden corners in his mind, you see. He's never turning on and off. He's turning on, he's following the way he thinks he should be living, and he turns off, he has a break. There's no such thing. At all times, he's evenly engaged. His mind is evenly engaged in understanding himself. And he has one objective, and that is Das Hashem, okay? Understanding insofar as possible, understanding the Creator, okay? Now, such an individual is a psychological phenomenon that is completely out of the realm of the normal, and it's a kind of existence that a person could never even imagine, you see, unless he has the Das Emes, which is our religion. Because a different kind of a religion and a different kind of a system, and it's one which breaks the barriers of all psychological ideas, religions that are man-made that are based on psychology. You see? And the mark of distinction of this religion is precisely over here. Namely, that there's no such thing as a person existing in a way where he turns on and then he turns off and he's taking a break from God, so to speak. See? Bechol derechecha da'eil means that the person is on a constant, is living in a constant world. There's a constant there. Constant is that he always is before God. Even Bidvar Avera means that he knows that God knows everything about his nature. Even the Dvar Avera doesn't create in him a sense of distance from God. You see? Because he knows God knows that too. See? You understand what I'm saying? It's a completely different idea. It's an idea that no man-made religion could ever come up with, because the whole purpose of the man-made religion is to throw the person into the good feeling of the religious emotion. You understand what I mean? That's the need for religion, because when man is oily miyitzri, oily miyotri works both ways. It means oily miyitzri, oily miyotri. It's even. It means, I guess, it means when I'm with yotri, so then I have a problem with yitzri. And when I'm the other way, the reverse is also true. If I'm with yitzri, I have a problem with yotri. Why? Because man isn't satisfied just living a physical life, physical pleasures. You see that anywhere. There's no every society, no matter what society you'll choose, you'll never find a society where people. I mean, that was a Margaret Mead, was a big fraud. She was trying to find the happy society. Happy society. People sit and they eat fruits and they are friendly, happy. There's no such thing. She basically made it up. But the truth of the matter is that man apparently can't live that way. Can't live it. So if you're going to be in Yitzri, you're going to have problems. That's why religion comes into the picture, because religion tries to satisfy the other side. Okay? Now we recognize, Yad just recognized that emotion, and the whole purpose of the Torah is to direct, like the Rambam says, the emotion for sacrifice. Yehadis took it and directed it towards the proper goal, because Yehadis recognizes only me, it's your only yachi. He recognizes the problem, but Yehadis also recognizes that there are always going to be two levels of human beings. There's the Ameam, there's the Amonam, and those people are going to always live on this kind of a psychological existence, you know, framework. But then there are the few, that's the realm's distinction, there are the few that go beyond that point. And they really relate to God with Yediyah. And for those people, there's no turn off, turn on phenomenon. But it's behold, that's what it is, behold the rachecha da'eyu. What's behold the rachecha? It's a filu b'dvar vera. Means the person never thinks, never functions on a psychological plane where now they turn off and now they're taking a break and then it reaches time. You see? I'll get back to class later, but they need a little break now. You see? That idea, that kind of life, that kind of existence is in the man-made religion, because that's what a man-made is trying to satisfy, these opposite forces in man. But in Yehadis, which is based on MS, the Navi, the person is on the high level, even in Dvar Avera, he is never off. It's still Berachol D'Rachecha De'ehu. He relates this to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well. God knows this, and he has to deal with it in terms of the framework of reality, and that means that even in that sphere, in every sphere, he only has one goal, and that is Das Hashem. That's the idea that only Nevi'im could do. Only if you have Nevuah could you pursue that idea. Could you come up with that idea? Yes. Again, I mean, I'm just saying this is my interpretation of what they're on. I mean, let me make that clear. I'm not saying that everyone has to take a break from Tayag Mitzvahs. I mean, of course, Tayag Mitzvahs means, Tayag Mitzvahs, you want to say Tayag Mitzvahs, is really encompasses everything on a certain level. But I mean, the basic asiyas and mitzvahs, I'm not talking about that. Okay, I'm talking about what the person obviously would not be satisfied with just saying, basically, I wasn't over eating chazer today. I wasn't over, I put on my tefillin. I mean, we're talking about a person that's on a more involved level, where he's satisfying a certain need in himself to live a religious kind of existence. Okay, yes? I just want to say this about this point. I say a 5 minute point. I say, you know, sometimes you see the Ramban says, I'm Mavin Yavin. Okay. The Rambam didn't, I think that I've clarified it a little more. But the fact remains, the bottom line is that what the Rambam is saying is correct. Namely, that if you understand the idea, okay, then the idea speaks for itself, basically. I mean, you can't go any further. Okay? But this idea is really central. It's very encompassing. We understand the idea. Think about it. You see, it's not just a simple, I'm mentioning a surface part of it. I mean, I'm trying to describe it somewhat. But it goes very, very deep. And it goes to the central core of the whole of Yahadis. Okay? The whole system really is encompassed by this idea. Okay. Come on. It's like today. See, that's a mistake before. You said that today they're successful. Today they may be successful in terms of dollars, but they're not successful in terms of what the purpose of the dollars are. In other words, the people that are so-called successful aren't really in a state of mind where they feel, you know, oh, I've taken care of my needs, and now I'm free from that burden. Now I can embark on something more important. Doesn't seem to lead to that. It seems to lead to a state where it's an endless pursuit, and they become more and more involved, and more and more headaches, and more and more stress, and more and more strain, and so there's no success. Okay, and that's the way it is today. In today's world, it's exactly the way it is. I don't care how much money they make, but the fact is that people live in existence which is extremely stressful no matter how much money they make. Well, they increase the amount of money they make, so they increase the amount of money they spend, and then they go into debt, and then they have to make more money in order to get out, and then they have to spend more time, and then they get caught up in a vicious cycle where they simply can't find any happiness from their original pursuit. So the purpose of the original pursuit, the goal, is never attained. All good?
Yeah. So the to work out the balance.
So what Chazal are really trying to tell you is, what Chazal are trying to tell you is the following, that if a person loses perspective, so then their goals become totally confused. And once their goals become confused, then they lose everything. That's what Chazal is saying. So that's what the Chazal is saying. That when they work less, so then their goals were straight. So therefore they knew how to devote the proper amount of time to each thing and to attain the happiness that they were seeking. But once they lost that, they lost perspective, so then because of that, even the area where they spent more time, it was more time, but it became more frustration. So therefore they lost everything, they had nothing. That's what Chazal is trying to teach you, that if you lose your perspective, you don't have the proper perspective, then you can never really be successful. Because once your goals become muddled and confused, so then you can't attain that which you started out to attain to begin with. So that's what Chazal is saying. Chazal is saying that the most important ingredient that a person needs in order to keep their perspective in life and the value system in the right way is a certain amount of time devoted to learning. Now once you lose that, so then the emotions take over, and once the emotions take over, then the person gets caught up in an endless cycle of pursuits where he's constantly frustrated, never happy, and he just gets deeper and deeper and never gets out of it. As a matter of fact, I spoke to a person who was a physician and now unfortunately is incarcerated, is in jail. And he told me, he says, that the truth of the matter is that in a certain respect, his life now is better than it was before. Because before he was working 15 hours a day, And he says he was a physician, he worked 15 hours a day, he was constantly involved in, in trying to stay above water. And he says, and now he has more time for learning than he ever had in his life. And he says, and in that respect, his life is improved. So you can't go by, you can't measure, that's a mistake that people make. They measure success by dollars. You can't measure success by dollars, you can only measure your success by your goals, by the purpose of the dollars. So if you earn a lot of dollars, but you're more frustrated and more in debt than you were before, then what good is it? And Chazal is saying that you really cannot keep your goals straight unless you spend a large part of the day in Torah. You spend a large part of the day in Torah, and you satisfy your energies in that area, then the other areas you'll be able to function rationally. But if you don't, then you're not going to be able to function rationally. Once you don't function rationally, so then you do crazy things, and then what happens is you ruin your life. Okay?
Alright. Before someone gets married, they're supposed to learn and kind of solidify their philosophy towards life. At what point does one reach that point? You know, what are the prerequisites for getting married? Because one can always learn more and solidify his philosophy a bit more. So is there any definitive level that he reaches where he's ready?
Okay, like we've shown him say that a person can learn until, 24. That's the age that the Rush says till 24. Around that age. So the question is, how do you arrive at that age? I mean, that's the question. It's a good question. What is it saying? It doesn't say it wasn't until age 24, right? Yeah, but the thing is like this, that when it comes to the area of learning, there are certain stages that a person goes through. And everybody has a potential, a certain potential. And when you reach a certain level, you're in a position where you can continue, and even though you may have less time, but you will still continue to gain. You see, but before that point, you really, if you slow down, if you start to spend the energies and divert the energies into different paths, so then you simply can never really attain anything, I mean, any level. I mean, it's like if a person's climbing a mountain, so you may have to exert effort and keep on going until you reach a certain point. Then you can take a rest. You take a rest at the wrong time, so then it's counterproductive, and then you can't really, will not be able to ultimately succeed. So every person has a potential, and when a person reaches potential in learning, a certain level in learning, so then the person is able to move ahead even if the pace slows down, you see. Mm-hmm. But before a certain level, you'll never be able to attain that level if you don't have the time, you don't have the opportunity. So therefore, if a person is married, ordinarily, in the ordinary circumstances, if a person gets married and is thrown into the area of responsibility, they can never really achieve being a lamdan in the framework of their own potential. You see? You need a certain amount of concentrated effort for a number of years before you can really reach a certain level of being a lamdan. Once a person is a lamdan, even if they learn 2 hours a day, 3 hours a day, they could maintain what they have and move ahead. But to become a lamdan that way, it'll never happen. That's why you see people that weren't able, didn't have the opportunity to become a lamdan at an early age. You see them learning, they learn for 20 years and 30 years, and you see them later, and they're basically the same as they were. They have more facts, but basically they really, really never advanced in terms of the depth of learning, because that takes a very concentrated effort. So that's what Chazal was saying, that a person has to get married, a person has to fulfill his responsibilities, but the person has to be a lamdan also. So the question is, how much time does a person have before they are obligated to get married? So Chazal said, what the Rush is saying is around 24. So 24, 25, around there, which means, assuming that the person started to learn, when they were youngsters and they had proper tutelage and they continued to learn and put in time, then around that age they'll reach their potential. And essentially. And then they could always advance continue to advance because they've mastered a certain, you know, they've reached a certain level of mastery of the subject. But if you don't have that opportunity to really put that concerted effort into the learning process, at any point, you really can't get anywhere in terms of depth of lungus. I mean, you can learn, you know, you can keep on learning, learn the Afyami, learn the blood every day, and, you know, accrue a lot of facts, but you're not going to really be able to reach an in-depth level. And that's why Chazal say, and that's why they're saying, around that age, given ordinary circumstances. We can't say for sure. It depends on the person. I mean, some people may be 27, maybe 30. I mean, depends on the individual, when the individual started. But it does reach, you do reach a specific finite position on this. In other words, you can't just go on indefinitely. So you're always, you know, you're always learning and you're always improving. That may be true. But you still have other obligations, and a person can't... is not permitted to postpone them indefinitely. But that's, you know, that's the criterion. The criterion is when you reach a certain level of lumbus, of learning, where the person's potential has been realized to a qualitative degree. You know, after that, a person always continues. But there's a certain qualitative level that a person has to achieve. Okay?
Judaism is a rational religion, has followed for its rational reason for a better life.
Has followed what?
Judaism.
Yes.
A rational religion to be followed for a means for productive life.
Correct.
Right. So the concept of how does onus fit into a religion which is to be followed for objective good as opposed to not being punished and getting getting benefit from loss. You know, I mean, I can understand your stoning for old children, you know, you don't have to be true, you know, that you're mad, but in terms of God, how is it?
Okay.
You know, you're not going to be true, you're not going to be God?
That's good, okay. That's a good question. The answer is like this. The answer is that there's two kinds of schav onesh. Okay. One kind of schav onesh is a schav onesh that occurs naturally. Like we mentioned before, if a person lives foolishly, so then naturally they're not going to be successful. Okay. And the same thing is true in so far as the goal that a person seeks in attaining perfection. Okay. In perfecting their soul. That if a person goes about it in a foolish way, so then they're going to lose. They're going to lose on that score. Okay, they're going to have to lose. And because like anything else. So really, in terms of the major schava onish is a natural schava onish, which means that if a person doesn't go about a thing properly and intelligently, they're going to be unsuccessful. All right? Now, in the world, in the material world, you can do something foolish and be successful. Because sometimes, you know, it's a quirk. I mean, a person buys a lottery ticket, so basically he's throwing a dollar out. But sometimes one in the millions will be successful. Because the physical world is constructed that way, that you can have accidental occurrences. But in the world of perfection, that never happens. Because the world of perfection, you don't have things like that. So therefore, there's no way in the non-material world, in the world of perfection, for a person to be successful without a proper plan. I mean, it just is impossible because it's contingent completely on logic and reason. All right? It's just like a person might be able to draw a triangle on paper, accidentally correct, but he can't possibly write one of Euclid's theorems correct by accident. I mean, without understanding, it won't work. So, right. So, in the world of ideas, you know, it has to be based upon knowledge. So, therefore, if a person, just like in any other pursuit, if a person goes about it in an unintelligent way, they're not going to be successful. The same thing is true over here. So, therefore, if a person has the perfect plan of how to approach this existence in terms of benefiting their inner essence, their what is essentially themselves, okay, what is, you know, what the self is, so he has to go about it in the proper plan, right? So the Torah really is the proper plan. So therefore, if a person does not keep the Torah, so they're going to have to fail because they didn't go about it properly. So that is really the, and if they keep the Torah, then it means they follow the proper plan, so then they will be successful. So the Schar V'Onesh, essentially, Schar V'Onesh is built in to the system. That's why you have many psukim like that in the Navi, where you say, Rak Beinecha Sabit V'Shilum HaShashayim Tira, or the Tmosis Rasha Ra, okay? What destroys the Russia is evil, because he's evil, and that's going to destroy him. I mean, the same thing is true where not necessarily a person is evil, but where a person errs in terms of following the proper plan. So that's why the word chait really means. The word chait means to miss the mark. Like in a Navi, it's used to, if you're shooting an arrow and you miss the bullseye, so it's called lachtos matara. I mean, so you failed. That's really what chait means, and that really essentially in a rational system, in our system, which is rational, so that's really what onish, schav onish essentially is. In other words, well, you missed the mark, okay? But there is something else also. Besides that, we say that God does intervene in a person's life, where a person makes a mistake, so God, through an onish, gives him another chance. The purpose of the onish is to enlighten him insofar as his misdirection is concerned. Okay? So that's why the pasuk says, but that's only people that are on a level. Because the pasuk says, Asher Yehav Hashem Yachiyach, that God reproves those individuals whom he loves. Kasher Yasa Ishas Beno Hashem Lekechem Yasreka, the pasuk says. So therefore, if a person is fortunate enough to be under Ashgacha and receive an onesh, that's a wonderful thing if he takes it properly, because that really means he deserved to have God do something to in his life to awaken him to the proper approach to put him back on course. Okay, so that onesh really is a good thing, but of course it's a better thing if the person does. It's a better thing if the person doesn't have to make recourse to an onesh, even if he were sure that he'd get an onesh, because the fact is, during that process, he's still wasting time that he could have been spent in advancing. Okay? So the ideal situation is where the person avoids the onesh. But the concept of schar v'onesh in Yahadus is basically that idea on the onesh side. On the schar side, there's something also. On the schar side, we say that God intervenes, and if a person is really approaching life according to Chachma, according to Derech HaTorah, so then God presents him with certain options and possibilities that help him along the course. Okay, because he needs certain physical situations in this existence. Okay, so therefore, God helps him out in terms of. In many areas, in terms of his panasa, in terms of his chaverim, in terms of his rebbeim, in terms of who he marries, in terms of all the things that are necessary in life that help a person to advance and to be able to achieve their goals. And even in the area of chachma, especially I should say in the area of chachma, so there is ashgacha that a person is looking to understand the deeper ideas of Torah. So a lot of particulars come into play. So sometimes you could be fortunate. I mean, if you're looking for an idea and someone approaches you and tells you, what's the pshat? You have a good Talmud that approaches you and says, what's the pshat in this Gemara? And you were looking and now you saw this Gemara, and therefore that's the Gemara that opens up the new area if you're looking for. So this little event to be something that's an eye-opener in terms of something you're, some piece of knowledge that you're looking for. So there's hashgacha in that area as well. So that's really schar. That's the true schar. So schar v'onish is a very important concept in Yahadis. And it even the Chazal goes so far even as to say that that if a person reaches a certain level in learning, that God gives him the learning matana. I mean, I don't know how it works, but apparently it means that he's able to schachma expands. I mean, schachma expands. He's able to So God helps a person. Mid matana means it's given to him. Torah is given to him as a gift, as a matana. So it's some kind of a process where the person becomes enlightened and he sees ideas that he wouldn't have seen ordinarily. So that's we say the ashgacha is involved in bequeathing upon a person this knowledge. So that's the idea of schar. That's the idea of schar. So the idea of onish and the idea of schar are very important ideas, and they really exist on two levels. One is on the natural level, and secondly, through the intervention of hashgacha, in either way. But there's no such thing as a bad onish. In other words, what you mentioned before, that doesn't exist. Like for a child being afraid of his father because he didn't go to shul, that doesn't exist in reality. In terms of God relating to man, because God doesn't just a father gets angry at a son for a lot of reasons, not necessarily because of the son's benefit. Sometimes the father's angry at the son because the son embarrassed the father, and he gets angry at him. The parent has their own needs too, but with God, of course, that's not possible. So with God, it's only for the benefit of the individual. So if a person receives an onesh, and it's an onish, which means that God directed this onish to him, that's a wonderful thing. That really shows you that the person's on a level that that God intervenes in his life and corrects him. And you see, there's a sforno. There's a sforno on the end of Tazria. You have a sforno over here? Across the doors, right? Not really. It's not the best. Yeah, I know, but this one was corrupted in the cross doors. See, and it says that if a person, so the person understands God, he understands, he has the proper knowledge of God and God's existence. So he says, so he's naturally drawn to go in God's ways. Okay, because he sees that's the ultimate reality, and he's drawn to live according to that reality. He says, and an individual who is on that level, he says, that is, he's an individual that is like God more than any other creature. Okay, because he's an intelligence and he's able to understand beyond the instinctual. He has a mind and he can pattern his life after God's ways. That's what lachta b'drachot. Okay, so he says, in a person like that, it's considered tzaddik yisod olam. That's tzaddik yisod olam. So he says that, he says that that's the foundation of the whole world because that's the purpose of the creation of man. Now it's really good. He says, but if a person follows the tithes, it means he follows his instinctual nature in all of his ways, even in some of them, which in which he deviates from the ways of God. So he says, so then it depends on the severity of it. Sometimes he will be in a situation of permanent loss, and sometimes of partial loss. Depends on the situation. In other words, like I mentioned before, that if the person is completely removed from perfection, so then that means that it's a permanent thing, because he has nothing, he's just losing instinctual life, so he'll be like an animal. Okay? And sometimes it might be like a partial type of thing, where, okay, it's not permanent, but it's partial. So he says, but if this happens to a person by accident, okay, in other words, bishgaga, where he didn't really intentionally decide to follow the instinctual way of life, but he really wants to do good, but he got lost. He is overpowered, okay, by the yetzer hara. He's overpowered by the instinctual. So he says, hine yisyaser b'mamono o b'gufo kefi achochma halokis. He says, then he will receive an onesh either in his money or in his body. Okay, God will punish him either. What? Hashgacha. Yeah, hashgacha. Right. B'mamono o b'gufo will be punished either in his money, loss of money, or physically, some physical situation. Kefi achochma halokis. According to God's chachma, okay, according to God's absolute chachma, so that will determine where and how the onus will take place. He says, lahoyer ozno, in order to awaken his ear, in other words, to wake him up, right, to make him aware, okay. So he says, kamo vayegal oznam lamusa, okay, vayegal oznam lamusa. It means that's the way of God, that he gives him an onesh in order to awaken him, to make him realize he deviated from the path and he should get back on. Okay? No, he's talking about the Yashkach. Because he quotes possibly, Yagal Oznom Lamosa. Okay, Kefir Chachma Lakis. So that means Yashkach.
It could be a dandy master, right, okay, but it says
most people, and even most Jews, Zulasi Yechidis Gula, only a few, he says, that understand the concept that through knowledge of God you attain perfection. He says, the other people, Hainbuli Savik Tachas Anagas Ateva Vagromiyam Hashemaimiyam. So there he says, those people are not under the direct influence of the Ashgacha, and they will not receive an honor. You see, that's what he's saying. Okay? Hanechbadam Meosim Neodam. Okay, because there he says the person is only under Hashgacha so far as the group is concerned. God's will is that the species should continue to exist, but not individually. So there's only the only time a person comes an individual and comes under Hashgacha of Schar V'Onesh is if they're on a high level. Okay, that's exactly what he says. That's what this one says. Okay. So the low-level people, not they're under the natural schar v'onesh that would apply to any situation where a person went about it unintelligently, they wouldn't receive any results. In other words, God will not intervene in their lives to correct them, because they don't have the basic premises. So they're under natural law. Right. Yes, I ran into her. Yes. The same way a person, and you see, you know, they say that today, most people are overweight, right? In spite of the fact they know that it's unhealthy, and they know that it's going to shorten their lives, and they know it's going to put them in a situation where they're going to be more susceptible to disease. Nevertheless, you see, most people can't do it. So why are they any different? So your argument is that just because you know that that this is better for you, that you're definitely going to do that. You see, take a look at most people. You see, most people don't seem to do what's better for them. Otherwise, they'd have much better lives. So that's not the idea. So free will is never impeded by simply knowing results. That doesn't seem to really make a difference. And that's why the miracles don't work either. Because miracles are external events. The only area of free will is where the person is at a point where they have a certain amount of knowledge and not simply of results. Results is not enough. You have to really have knowledge of the good, what the good really is, have an understanding of it. And you have to have knowledge of the self, of how a person works and functions, and what his instinctual nature is. And then a person is in a position where they could withstand the pull of the emotional. The emotional is a powerful pull, a momentary. The emotional pull is very powerful, but it's momentary. But the intelligence, the mind, is much stronger. But there the person has to decide between which way to go. But just because you know that there are bad results is not going to really place you in a situation of bechira. Just like you see today, like I said, everybody wants to be healthy, I assume. And nevertheless, people are, they say, more overweight now than they ever were before. And they know more than ever before that it's bad for them. I mean, when I was a youngster, people didn't know that. They didn't have that bit of knowledge. You see, in spite of the knowledge, they still can't control themselves. So it doesn't seem to be that if you know that something is just the mere knowledge of something is bad, doesn't seem to really take away your ability to do it, to indulge in it, nevertheless. Why did it fail? Why did it fail? Now you see, it didn't fail. Because the invention is free will. Well, free will means that you could choose either way, right? So most people chose the wrong way doesn't mean that it failed. It chose. If that's what you mean. I mean, there is a. I mean, what you're talking about is obviously a difficult thing to answer. I mean, you have to have God's knowledge to determine whether this invention failed or not. But it would seem that there was a point in the Torah where there is such an idea, as you're saying. I mean, by Dar Mabel, by Hashem Ki Rabba Ras Adon Loras Achol Mashos, by Yatzal Yam Hashem Yatzal. So you see that you're right, according to the Torah, that there can be a situation where the invention fails. But apparently God rectified that with the Dar, after Dar Mabel, with the Dar that followed from Noah. You know, so that's God's decision to determine whether it really failed. And you can't measure by quantity either, because one tzaddik could be worth more than millions of rishayim. So you have to know how you weigh the scale in terms of Vayar Hashem Ki Tov. That only God could do. But just say thank God that up to this point it seems to be okay. Seems to be good, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that it can't be improved, but in terms of saying that God, in terms of the creation, you don't see that God has charab, so to speak. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
there are two ways that I mean, there are two systems that we live under. One is the system, the natural system, and the other system is the system of Hashgacha. Okay, now the only way that you can have the system of Hashgacha kick in is if you live according to the Torah, Tayag Mitzvahs. The person accepts Tayag Mitzvahs, and of course Yisrael lives by Tayag Mitzvahs. If you live in that derech, and that derech of Chachma, so then you're guaranteed success. But today, obviously, Klal Yisrael is not living in that framework. So therefore, we're not under that Hashgacha. If we were, so then we would have the Beis HaMikdash. Beis HaMikdash represents a certain level of living in that framework. So we don't have that. So obviously we aren't. So now we're subject to natural law, which means that things have to work according to natural political laws. So that's why you have these kind of problems. These problems are based upon interactions of different nations and different political situations and dependencies and power and all those elements, you know, that involve political science. So that's why, I mean, that was the Shavuos, really. The Shavuos is we're not allowed to, unless and until the time when the return of Klal Yisrael to its original stature, which means it'll be as a Mashiach, so we can't do things that don't make any sense politically, because we're under the natural law. That was one of the things that the Shlomo HaMelech was Mashbiya Klal Yisrael. It's about just coming to the Rosh Hashanah the Tzvos and to Eruv and Torah Sa'ava Atche Techbatz. That's what Mark explains in Ksubas. That means that you can't do crazy things. You can't just say, well, Klal Yisrael, we're going to Eretz Yisrael, and this is our land, we're going to live here, and that's it. It's not so simple, because we're not under the Hashgacha to the degree that we will be protected. So that's precisely what the Shua is. The Shua was that you shouldn't be Ola B'chama. Ola B'chama means they just go into its throw and take over. Take without any strategy, without any political plan, but we're just going to say that God has to protect us. There was someone that actually was promoting that kind of a political position years ago. But that's against the Shua's. That's exactly what the Shua's. Shua's say you can't do that. Not allowed to do that until Atche Techbatz, until the time that we find favor in God's eyes and returns our nation to its original stature through Bias Mashiach, and through the fact, of course, Bias Mashiach means that Klal Yisrael accepts the ways of the Torah and the Chachma of the Torah and live according to that system. But when they do, then that's exactly what the Torah says, that when they do, that they will reign supreme. And no one will be able to exercise any type of control over them. But one second, Torah wasn't given? When?
Before
Sinai, yeah. That's correct. But the thing is, what you're saying is correct, but there's one thing that's wrong, and that is, you're saying that they didn't have, the Torah wasn't given. The Torah wasn't given, there was no bris, but the Rambam explains that from the time of Avraham Avinu, the mitzvos in the Torah was actually practiced and was given. Of course, you have from mitzvos milah, and then tefillah, and then meiser, and then Amram received mitzvahs Mitzrayim, and you see Chazal say, in Mara they were given mitzvahs. So the mitzvahs, they always had. Not all the mitzvahs, but the mitzvahs were always there. But the Bris Sinai didn't take... When Sinai came along, two things happened. First of all, the rest of the corpus of Torah was completed. Okay, the body of Torah was completed. And in terms of as an entity, and secondly, there was a krisas bris between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's Sinai. But before then, there was a bris Avram existed, and there was Bris Avram, and there was also mitzvos, just not as many.
If man knows knowledge or acquires knowledge through sense perception, and even the conceptual knowledge is anthropomorphized or related through physical terms, how can one come to a knowing of God to the degree that he can base his life on that knowing if God is absolutely removed from the sensory perception?
I mean, there's no doubt that knowledge comes to us through the senses. But you see, in spite of that, man is able to go very, very far away from the senses in knowledge and understanding and an abstract thought. And so while knowledge starts with the senses, what happens to the after? What happens afterwards is man goes very far. He can go very, very far in the world of abstract thought, even though he just starts with a few sense perceptions. That's because he has a tzelem elokim, which takes the sense perceptions and throws it into a whole different kind of a framework, and takes off on its own. It takes off, and the sense perceptions become a very small part of the person's knowledge. I mean, if you take a great thinker, you will find that the great thinker doesn't really spend much time in sense perception. Okay, spends most of his time in thinking, which means that the which shows you that the bulk of the effort and work that takes place is really very, very much removed from sense perception. As a matter of fact, sense perception becomes something which interferes with the person's thinking. So it shows, the Tzelem Elokim shows you that you can take certain raw materials, even small amounts of these raw materials, and then weave them into unbelievable patterns of knowledge and understanding. And the sense perception becomes a very, very insignificant component in terms of the whole. That's because the person has a Tzelem Elokim. So just because you start off with a sense perception, you need a sense perception in order to initiate the process, it doesn't mean the process is essentially one of sense perception. Essentially, it's not really. And a very small amount is really because of sense perception. That's basically there was a function. Tzelem Elokim is really primary and overtakes and overshadows the beginnings of knowledge that take place in sense perception. But in relation to knowledge of God, of course, even that isn't enough. And that's why we say that the knowledge of God is always in the negative. It's always in the negative. But that negative also shows that there is a kind of intuitive that's pure. In other words, if you say the concept of existence, you can't say that God exists like this table exists, okay, or that God exists like anything exists. But you do have in your mind an abstract idea of existence. But because of the fact that our knowledge comes from sense perception, there is always an admixture of some kind of a physical thing there. And the greater a person gets, the more they remove that physical. So by carving away from the physical, which attends the pure idea, you get closer to a knowledge of God's existence, which is pure existence. But in this world, you can't really get it completely, but you can get closer and closer. There are different degrees. Just like in science, you always get closer and closer with every scientific theory. You get closer and closer to understanding the phenomena. Okay. You never really get it exact, because even in that world, and you know, just is our ability is not that great that we could really just master it. But you get closer with every theory; you're getting closer, you're approaching it closer and closer. And that's the same thing insofar as knowledge of God is concerned. But that's because there is something inside of us which has the pure idea. But because it came through the senses, there's an admixture of it's tainted with a certain kind of physical feature which is always attached to it. So, but the more chachma a person gets, the more they can remove that aspect of it, and that's all we can achieve in this existence. You can never really get the ultimate. That's why the pasuk kolei yirani al v'chayi. Even Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't have an absolute conception of God. He approached it more than anybody else, but he still couldn't have a pure idea. All right, let's see. Let's read the question first. Let me just hear any more questions, guys.
Also, before you were talking about the spinal nectar, I wanted to have a bit of Lamaba.
And on the ball? Well, there's no Schav Onish there. It's either Schav or Onish. Now, in Olam Abba is really, you know, the world of Schav Onish is only here. Schav Onish is only here. And Olam Abba is the result, whatever remains of the individual after they've gone through this process. But that's, in other words, there's no more, God does not reprimand the person in Olam Abba. There's no more kasha yasser ishus benau. There's no more onish aschar as we understand it over there. Over there is it's simply whatever degree the person has achieved and attained, they permanently remain with. Okay, so that the idea of schar that we're talking about is not. If you mean schar, yes, it says ayom lasosom mochal akal scharim, which means that and the existence after this existence, so the person, if they live properly, will attain their the best situation of existence for their soul. But and if they didn't, so then that's impossible because their soul is not fit for that existence. You understand what I mean? In other words, like it's a natural kind of thing where the soul is not simply not fit for an existence. If it wasn't prepared for it, so therefore it can't exist in that type of situation, and therefore it ceases to exist. Yes. That's a mashal. As though it would appear that a person is given an opportunity to state their case. And that God enlightens the individual insofar as the judgment is concerned. It's not just given the judgment, but they have a knowledge of why and how things are the way they are at that point. So it means that the person is really given knowledge, not just in terms of the fact that the soul exists, continues to exist, and perceives external knowledge, but also understands its own position. So even the soul of the Russia understands, he's given the understanding as to why he is a Russia and why his judgment is a correct judgment. Okay?
Regarding Olam Haba, first of the followers,
what was the purpose of Olam Haba? Okay. So the world of ideas is really the hallmark of human existence, and so therefore, what the Torah says is that there is a situation that a person can indulge in that world of ideas to the greatest degree without any hindrances that they have here. And that is in the Olam, in Olam Haba. That's really the whole purpose of it. That's the whole essence of Olam Haba. So Olam Haba is really the situation, because in this world, as much as a person can be involved in ideas, there are always hindrances and always difficulties and other things that he has, internal difficulties, external difficulties. So the Olam Haba, the concept is that there the person can have this world of ideas without any of the problems that they have in this existence.
The Torah is a universal system for all human beings to fulfill their maximum, their optimal potential on this world. But if human beings have different values, even to a small degree, even just particulars, how can one system fulfill everyone optimally?
And so we say, only God can create that system. Yeah, because, well, the thing is, the way it works is as follows. That the system of Torah is worked out in a way that if a person understands the structure, the halachic structures, and the way the halachic structures are adhered to, and the methods of analysis, and the situations of the halacha, so you'll find that it is such an ingenious work that it really suits every level of human existence. Okay? But to say that every single human being in every single situation, that in every particular situation, that this would be the best thing, the Rambam says that is not true. He says because that's virtually impossible, and God doesn't do the impossible. But to say on the whole, that this is the best system for every person, that is correct. That is correct. Okay, because the situation is built upon on the nature of man. Okay, and therefore, since God knows man's nature, so therefore he structured a system which would be perfect both socially and on every different level. That's precisely the way the system is structured. The more knowledge a person gains of Torah, the more they see that this is really, the system which really takes into consideration every level of human being. But in spite of that, you're right in the sense that you cannot say that in every single situation with every single human being, that in every single time, the way of Torah is going to be the best way. That's virtually impossible. But in general and practically all the time, unless the person is in certain remote conditions, but the halacha is very careful where there are exceptions. So, a person is sick, so he's pata from this, and a person is a terasa naso, so he's pata from tefillah. So the Torah is geared towards different levels of existence, and halacha is very very careful to if you study halacha, to know when there are allowances and when there, it's a whole system. And that's why 99% of the time is the most perfect way of life. But the Rambam says to say 100% is virtually impossible. And that even God doesn't do, because God doesn't do the impossible. So practically all the time, it is the best way.
Stop here.
Okay. What was your question? Okay, let me just answer the question is the difference in scientific knowledge and between Torah knowledge. Okay, the difference between scientific knowledge and Torah knowledge is one thing, and that is the subject matter. Subject matter. In other words, a scientist has a specific subject matter, whether it's geometry or whether it's calculus or whether it's physics or whether it's another branch of mathematics or whether it's chemistry, whatever it might be, you understand? The chachma, the scientist, is tied to the subject matter. Okay?
The Chachma of Torah is also tied to a subject matter, and that subject matter is the Derech HaChayim. The only scientific approach to the Derech HaChayim, to the way of life, is the Torah. So that's why a scientist can be steeped in Taiva, because that's not a science. It's not his area. Different subject. So you can go to college and you'll take different subjects, and there's no course in college on what is the right Derech HaChayim. Go to the registrar and find out for such a course. Not in any college that I know of. Not in any university. The course on the proper Derech HaChayim. I'll tell you, this philosopher, that philosopher, and this, and most of the time they'll say that they'll wind up with skepticism. You see? So there is no course in Derech HaChayim. There's only one institution that gives us a course in Derech HaChayim, and that's the Beis Medrash. Okay. Beis HaMedrash gives the course in how to live. So in college, you'll always learn sciences, which usually are a means for living. But when it comes to the end of how to live, no courses. That's the difference. The subject. Okay? I'm not so sure about that. I mean, it depends on the area. You can take an isolated area, and it doesn't matter whether you're steeped in Taiva or not. I mean, just insofar, it depends what the area is. If you're dealing with metaphysics and philosophy, the more the area veers into Derech HaChayim, the more perfection is required. But I could show you great mathematicians that lived crazy lives. I mean, because mathematics is an isolated thing. So a person can be great in chess. Doesn't mean they're going to... You want to go to them for advice. I mean, unless it's the area of chess you're interested in. But there's no rule that's going to stop the mind from functioning. If it doesn't function properly in one area, it could still function unbelievably. The mind is an amazing thing. The mind can function unbelievably in one area, and another area simply ceases to function. The individual is overcome with emotion, with passion. I mean, you see that all the time. That's why people's lives are messed up, because most of the time it's because of misjudgments, which means they're overpowered, their minds are overpowered by certain emotions. So that area, obviously, the mind is not going to be able to function properly. But if you take the mind away into an area where it's purely mind, and the emotions don't play any role, then it's just a matter of how much energy you put into that area. Okay? But in Torah, it's different. See, in Torah, it's different, because in Torah, you're interested in metaphysics. And metaphysics depends on perfection, because the Darche Hashem is really based on perfection. And insofar as you don't have perfection, your mind is blocked off from seeing the truth. You see, so in that area, in the area of metaphysics, you can't advance unless you're perfected, because you're going to be blocked. Because you want things to be a certain way, because you are that way, and therefore you're not going to see other ideas. You're not going to be able to break through, make any major breakthroughs in that area. But in isolated areas, yes, the human mind is an unbelievable phenomenon. I mean, it can do amazing things. You can direct tremendous amount of energy in isolated areas. I mean, look at the chess players. I mean, that's a chachma. You see a lot of players chess on Shabbos. They're passing as chachma. So it's a chachma, but it's a very limited, isolated chachma. It has to do with you're not getting new concepts. It's new particulars and new cheshbonos, calculations, and a person can spend their whole life in that. It doesn't matter if the chess player is a Baal Taiva or if the chess player is not a Baal Taiva. What matters is how much time he's putting into chess. If there's a factor in his intelligence. But given even intelligence, the one that puts in more time and more effort is going to be a superior player. Whether after hours he indulges in taiva, or after hours the person will be involved in studying history or something else, it doesn't really make a difference. Okay. Yeah. Okay. But generally speaking, you don't find a chazal to do it.
think it's something that fits more for the people that are living than for the to bring the person to the recognition of the fact that there is a Shasana. That's really Ramban says that you want to say the reason why you don't do Srika, because Srika Lames is because we believe that the nefesh is kaya, the nefesh really exists. So therefore, even though you miss the person, that the person's nefesh is not lost. So he says, the Srika is that the communication effect is gone forever, so they rip like they ripped away. They don't exist. So he says, we don't believe that, so therefore we're not allowed to do that. Because he knows that Srika would be a denial of Asharas and nothing. That's what the Ramban says. So really, in my opinion, the reason for the mole is to make it cognizant to the people that the nefesh still exists. You see? So it's only one word, hamsa, right. But the other words are just as much futuristic as petitional. In other words, Yitzra v'tzorachayim is much more so. It means you will. You can interpret it as you will. Yastireyu v'seisekenafa v'yol woman doesn't necessarily have to be a petition. It could also be a statement. Yeah, you will. You will do this. You will. Okay. But the first issue is a hamtzen v'nochanachona. Mevakesh. It's not really a tefila. But the raya is, you don't put it in Shmona Esrei. It's framed that way. It's a good question why it's framed that way. But basically, the purpose is that that's why they say mole at the time of the Hesped, is that the people should recognize that there is Hasharas HaNefesh, and that the person isn't really lost forever. And that's the purpose of saying the mole. That's really the purpose of the mole. That's the purpose of the mole. Sprenger, if you have any question, why it's it's a good question, but it's not really a genuine tefillah. But when really a tefillah, you say it in Shema Kalena, and you say no one says Shema Kalena, so that's not really a tefillah. Lashon tefillah, good question. Why Lashon tefillah? There's a lot of things on Lashon tefillah also not necessarily real tefillahs. It's a different kind of a tefillah. I don't think it's based on that. Because that was a rare kind of a thing. You know, if you understood, it's a specific case. It never happened any other time. It's a very particular thing. I don't think that the mole is based on that, even though it'll be a Pesach for it. It's a good question why it's framed in Russian Kibbutz. That requires an explanation. But the essence of it is really to make the people aware of Hasharas HaNefesh.
The only impediment of knowing God in this world is the physical, right? Our happens to the physical. Therefore, so does that mean that we know the essence of God in Olam Haba?
That's the person who wrote. Moshe Rabbeinu probably
does. Moshe Rabbeinu probably knows the essence of God. But is there anybody else besides Moshe Rabbeinu that could have done it? Or did it like to be done three quarters of the way, then you would know it?
I don't know. You cannot have a knowledge of God's essence as God has a knowledge of his essence. That would be impossible. But it would mean that he has some knowledge of this, some positive knowledge of God's essence. What that means.